Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
My friends, the great experiment.
Down on the Lord, thanks. Thanks.
Hit it. Drink. Drink.
Would you look at that?
The greatest trick. Trick.
You people, you're all astronauts. Some kind of star.
Trick. Trick.
Welcome to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
It's been a very, very long time since we have recorded any podcasts, Adam.
It's been a long time since I've looked at your face.
Yeah, it's...
I'm kind of relieved to see it again.
Yeah, does it look different? Does it look tireder?
It does look more tireder, I'll say that. But I've seen you tired before. You of the 4 hours of sleep after a Toronto show. Like, we've seen each other tired, but maybe you're dealing with multiple Torontos in a row is what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm on like weeks and weeks of Torontos on end.
Oh, I am sorry to hear that.
Apology accepted.
That sounds like a rough life, dude.
Nah, it's okay. It's good. You know, it's like worse and better than people say, you know?
That's a fun way to hear it.
I think there's a lot of people liking to exaggerate, going like, oh, you're in for it, buddy.
I don't think we've said it on this episode, and in case this is someone's first Greatest Trek episode, maybe we should say that you became a father a couple weeks ago, and that is what we are talking about.
I did, yeah. I have a new baby here. He's doing great. He and my wife are in great shape, but yeah, we're doing new baby stuff, so lots of late nights, lots of, you know, why is he crying? I can't figure out why he's crying. Lots of... going to change the diaper and the geyser of piss hits you in the face while you're mid-diaper. It's just like every comedy trope.
You're actually getting legit piss hits? It's not just a thing that you see in movies and stuff?
It's real.
Wow.
That's a real part.
Have you put all of your nice clothes away? You have a lot of nice clothes. You like to look good anyway. Have you stopped caring about all of that because you don't want to get them pissed on?
No, because the piss is pretty innocuous. It's not like cat piss, you know, where it'd be like, okay, you got to throw the clothes away.
Is the piss like brightly... I love how we're doing piss talk on the show. Is the piss brightly colored like vitamin piss? Like, does a new baby take a lot of boob nutrients and then like the piss is just crazy colored?
The poo is crazy colored. The piss is not.
Huh.
The piss is regular.
Huh.
Yeah.
And a baby doesn't make logs, right?
No, it's like... how shall I describe what a baby makes? It's like if you squeeze lemon juice into milk, you know that like kind of curdling that happens?
Uh-huh.
If you squeeze lemon juice into orange Gatorade and the same thing happened, that's sort of what comes out of a baby's dumper.
Oh, that is so gnarly.
I mean, after the armis phase. There's the armis phase, and then there's the curdled Gatorade phase.
Right, right. The armis phase being dank and vile poop.
Right, yeah. A skin of evil, if you will.
Yikes. Thanks for being my health class, Ben. I clearly wasn't paying attention.
Nobody tells you this stuff. It's just thrust upon you in more ways than one.
Not only does no one tell you this during health class, no one has the bravery to ask the hard questions.
Right.
The way 40-something-year-old Adam asks to a fellow adult.
It's like, sure, you're making me carry this sack of flour around my high school for a week as a way of simulating what having a responsibility would look like. But what color poops is this flower making?
There needs to be like a shame chaperone in middle school and high school that's sort of like a 21 Jump Street project where there's someone who looks a little too old to be a student in the class is asking the hard questions about what babies pee and poop look like.
Is this like a never been kissed situation?
Yeah, maybe it is. Yeah. We'll get Drew Barrymore in there or Adam Sandler or whoever is usually in those movies.
Probably Rodney Dangerfield in our case.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that could provide a great service to the students of America.
Right. What do we not know we don't know?
In my case, it's so much.
But yeah, it's been mostly pretty great. He is still like so little that he hasn't even like really made eye contact with anybody.
Oh, that's a real Harrison trait right there.
I
would say he's maturing quite normally.
He farts, sleeps, and doesn't make eye contact. So he really takes after me.
That's great.
Yeah.
Also leaving a lot of cashews around the house.
Yeah, so takes after his mother in that way.
Uh-huh. Just a perfect blend.
I think you're gonna meet this kiddo tonight.
Tonight, for the first time. I'm very excited to do that.
Yeah, but in the meantime, you and I have an episode of Star Trek : Lower Decks to talk about. I've been going through podcast withdrawals. I've been missing talking to you. I tried to listen to an episode of ours that hadn't come out yet to QA it. I don't know if you've noticed. I haven't really been in the company Slack much lately.
I've noticed.
I started listening to one to QA and I was like, it makes me mad to listen to this. I can't do it.
Wow. What?
I just want to be recording with Adam.
That's amazing. I too have missed you very much. It has been, look, I've missed you for selfish reasons too, because we've talked about this before, out in the world, when you don't have a comedy foil and you're just like working with civilians.
Is that how you think of me, Adam, as your foil?
They don't appreciate our comedy stylings, the normals out there.
No, no.
You keep my balls in the air and I keep your balls in the air. And that's the deal.
Keep our balls in the air and our minds in the gutter and our microphones trained on all of the latest from Star Trek. Do you want to get into it, Adam?
Sure do, Ben. It's Star Trek Lower Decks today, Season 3, Episode 6. Hear all, trust nothing. Ben, a lot of people have been asking us on the socials. I know you're not on the socials either. You haven't been for many weeks. People are saying, did you notice the koala in the opening? Yes, of course I noticed the koala in the opening. It's right there.
I don't think I noticed it. Where is it?
So when Picard's mom's hanging body is swinging around into space, one of the shots of the stars in the background shows the koala welcoming Picard's dead mother to the afterlife.
So continuity of koala is being preserved
in
Lower Decks. That's great. Also, continuity of Vancouver is being preserved. Mm. This episode opens with the Cerritos en route to a rendezvous with the Vancouver. Mm. And they're getting back together again for a big mish.
You remember the Karema, right?
Mm-hmm.
Famous Deep Space Nine species, the Karema.
I think that the Karema character was played by Farmer Hoggett, if memory serves.
Yeah. There were incidents involving the Karema. These incidents include Tula Berry wine, right? And then like an unexploded torpedo that Quark had to help defuse.
Yeah.
Those are the things I remember about the Karema.
Quark and Farmer Hoggett loving it that the cut rate munitions that the Karema were selling to the Dominion didn't work that well.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was supposed to explode on impact, wasn't it?
Maybe I should offer them a refund.
But yeah, the Cerritos is on haul all the gifts duty. I guess the Federation is going to try and butter the Karema up after that horrible chapter in their history.
They're like a ship of balloons, right? You see this kind of car on the road sometimes. They're the ones bringing the balloons to the party. And
right.
Like all you can see in the back window is Mylar.
Right. And you're like, I hope those clowns have an air hose somewhere.
Admiral Good Friend FaceTimes.
Do we know Admiral Buenamigo's first name?
I don't know.
Is it Ricardo? Because is that a joke on the famous Revolutionary War ship, the Bonhomme Richard, that the French gave to the American colonists?
I sure hope so, Ben, because if it is, that's just a one-person joke. Yeah, that's just for you.
That's a no percenter.
Like, we cut to the Lower Decks writer's room, and there's one nerdy fuck in the corner, just like smugly nodding, listening to our show. Yes. Well, if Ben gets it, it's got to be good.
Yeah, yeah. I like that somebody's writing for me.
Finally. Yeah.
The Admiral is FaceTiming up to explain that the Vancouver is off to do some other bullshit, and Captain Freeman is going to have to take lead on the diplomatic mission, a mission for which one would need quite a bit of prep, and a mission for which she has done none.
Yeah.
You have to make it work. Buenamigo out.
This is a bummer. This is like showing up for a lab day and your lab partner can't do it.
Right.
You got to fillet that frog yourself.
The vegetarian kid is like refusing to participate on moral grounds. And so dissecting the fetal pig falls to you.
Yeah, but where does vegetarian kid draw the line? You've seen what he eats in the cafeteria.
Yeah. And vegetarian kid like gets in his dad's BMW and smokes on his way out of the school parking lot. So it's like, where's your moral high ground now, vegetarian kid?
Are you suggesting the vegetarian kid is smoking meat cigarettes?
No, I'm just saying, like, you know, there's other kids in the car that's, you know, not really taking their lungs into consideration.
Yeah.
Secondhand meat smokes.
Yeah. I mean, they could get out of the car anytime or put the windows down, Ben. Mm. How about those ideas?
Well,
hey, you know what? They could just take the bus instead of getting a ride to school like the cool kids.
I mean, all of this is being observed from my vantage point on the bus, and I am wondering why those kids got in that car in the first place.
God, as soon as kids in my school were old enough to drive, it was like that scene in Far and Away where Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman have to like stake their land. It's like they run out there and they put stakes in the ground and they need to run super fast to get as much land as they can. That was all of the students in my school running toward the people with cars of their own in order to get rides to school.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, boy, oh boy, Ben, the sadness of a bus rider in my particular middle and high school years, not something you wanted to have. Pretty bad spot.
My sadness was only exacerbated by the fact that my dad was typically late to drop me off to the school bus stop in our part of town. Uh-huh. So often we would take to the highway and he would speed until we caught up with the school bus. And then he would like drive alongside honking his horn and the school bus would get off the highway and pull over on the side of the road. And I would have to trudge from my father's Volvo 240 station wagon onto the school bus and endure the indignity of trying to find a seat after the entire school bus of kids wondered why we were pulling over.
Ben, I love that story. It's a story dramatic and well told, but I know it to be a lie because I've never known your father to drive over the speed limit.
If it's between driving the speed limit and not having to deal with me all day, he will speed.
I also know that's not true because I've been in the car with you on airport runs that your dad has driven and it's never happened. I love your father. He's a great man, but he is not a speedy man.
He used to be. It all changed when I got my learner's permit.
And that'll be you one day, Ben.
I know. Yeah. I mean, I'm already drawing that arc right now.
Are you thinking of everything in those terms now?
Pretty much, yeah.
Real cats in the cradle terms?
Yeah, yeah. So they pull up to where this negotiation is going to take place, Adam. And it's a familiar location in the Star Trek universe.
If you don't recognize it by sight, you're going to recognize it by sound. Because when the Deep Space Nine theme plays upon arrival, the feelings come rushing back, don't they?
Tacky Cardassian fascist eyesore,
Yeah, I love Shax just like kicking these nostalgic feelings in the nuts.
This is like a statue of Robert E. Lee to Shax, right?
Yeah. It should be ripped down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there used to be like a bronze of Ducat on top of the ops section there in the middle, and they like pulled that down with a tank.
Look, man, the Cardassian flag sticker is just like cultural, man.
Yeah.
It doesn't have anything to do with Bajoran slavery.
It's just like, hey, man, it's part of our history.
Boy, they really rack up the kilometers flying around DS9 into theme, don't they?
They do. Was this the version of the Deep Space Nine theme that the show launched with, or was this the slight like redo of the theme music that happened in...
Oh, I think it was the original.
I kind of thought so, too.
It wasn't the thrump da da dump da da dump version of later on, where there's like some real propulsion behind it.
A lot of people have been saying online that they think it's the thrump da dump da dump version, and I disagree with them. If anything, it might be a re-record of the original arrangement, but I don't think there's a thrump da dump da dump in there.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah,
that's definitely a later season thing with Deep Space Nine. Isn't it interesting, like how a cartoon can convey a beautiful moment, though, because that's definitely what they're going for here, and I feel like they succeed.
Yeah, it looks great. I mean, like, it's kind of amazing to see this station rendered in 3D, but in cartoon 3D.
Yeah.
It sort of makes me pine for the HD remaster of DS9 that everybody swears up and down is never going to happen.
One thing that I had been pining for a long time, I get reunited with here, Ben, on board the station. It's Colonel Kira.
Yeah.
God, I've missed Kira.
We all have, Adam.
Captain Freeman, welcome to Deep Space Nine.
And this is happening in a part of the timeline where Colonel Kira is still running the place. She's still got the baseball on the desk and everything.
Yeah. It's pre-baseball removal. You know she gets rid of the baseball at some point, right?
Yeah. I mean, probably because she, you know, is like fucking around with it on her desk at some point, and some Bajoran official comes in and goes, it belongs in a museum, because that's like a holy relic to them, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. The Cisco's ball.
Yeah.
Do you think anyone plays baseball in the holosuite after Cisco fucked off?
I mean, every Sunday, right? It's a sacrament to the Bajorans.
That's right. God, it's like the kids really complain about going to play baseball on Sunday morning. They really want to sleep in.
Oh, Mom, it's so boring. And the pants are itchy.
And there's that gross wine we have to drink.
I don't want an orange wedge.
Yeah. Kira and Shax go way back, and I love the repetition of these moments. They immediately get into a kind of wartime heroism measuring contest with each other. Yeah. And they both measure from the POW camp.
They really do. This sort of becomes its own storyline. Like, the if we're going to extend the baseball metaphor, who's going to get their hand to the top of the bat first? Kind of a situation between them.
Yeah, and which one's going to get the dizziest when they when they're going around and around on that thing?
Yeah, no kidding. Meanwhile, the LDs are pretty excited about visiting the station, but Mariner is not going to go with them because Mariner is going to go get to know Jennifer's friends.
Yeah.
Ooh, meeting the friends. That's big.
Rutherford is really the fans' proxy here throughout the episode, I think.
Yeah. In the way that Boimler is the Voyager fan of the show,
yeah,
Rutherford is the Deep Space Nine fan of the show, and he wants to do all the things. He wants to, like, buy all the items in all the stores. He wants to dangle his legs on the promenade.
Guys, this is awesome.
That really checks out with the Jake Sisko clothing that he was wearing a couple episodes ago, right?
Like, oh man, yeah.
That really pencils out.
I like that a lot.
Because for some reason, Jake Sisko.
It's me, Jake.
And that he and Tendi go to Sisko's to eat.
To Quark's.
No, I mean.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Back when they were taking leave during the trial.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about this episode, but you were talking about a previous episode, which I watched a long time ago.
Months and months ago.
Yeah, I actually watched this episode back then also, and it took me a while to figure out whether or not I'd watched this one or not, just because I was so tired and so it had been such a long time.
So covered in lemon juice and orange Gatorade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was real messy. The Karema show up on the station, and we get just kind of like a little vignette with them walking down the pylon from their ship.
I don't know how these alpha savages managed to win the war.
Neither do I.
It seems like they've got a plan B if negotiations don't go well, and the plan B is heavily implied to be like bomb strapped to the chest based.
Yeah, that is quite the plan B.
Yeah, and what we know about the Karema from Deep Space Nine does not lead me to believe that they're like a self-sacrificing lot, you know?
No, not at all. And it's super reductive how the Karema are described here. I believe they're called a mercantile species. Do you think that's what they call themselves?
Mm.
It's such a civilization-style reduction into a, this is what your species is into, and this is how we think of you only.
Oh, yeah. I'm just scrolling around, and I do see that this episode was written by Sid Meier.
Right. Well, that checks out.
Yeah.
But it does make you think that...
I didn't know that Sid Meier was that funny.
It seems like when you're a mercantile species, you wouldn't be much of a threat. But this guy's assumed bomb under his robes would beg to differ.
I mean, they are sort of the Ferengi of... the Delta Quadrant, right?
Yeah.
If there's even a chance at making a profit, I'll hear them out.
Yeah, but their lethality seems to be in question, right? Like, I don't know. I don't fear them the way I would fear a Ferengi, but maybe I should.
Yeah. Down on the promenade, we see that Quark is also going to be a part of this episode as a person who has sort of gained some celebrity for his chain of Quark's restaurants, which... we know about from other new Trek series. We've seen establishing shots with Quark's restaurants in Star Trek Picard.
Right. All across new Star Trek, we've seen the Quark's franchises.
So no surprise. But yeah, it does seem like it sort of cuts against one of the things we know about Quark, which is that he's always like the most avaricious character on Deep Space Nine, but he never gets his come up. He mostly gets comeuppance.
In this case... he seems to be like super self-aware, like a profit-sucking parody of himself almost. As much avarice as he embodied before, like he just seems even more so.
Yeah. And like he is capitalizing on the like self-dunk of that in a way.
Yeah. He's got no shame at all.
Oh, I love Starfleet. I do a lot of business in Federation space.
What rule of acquisition is that?
Not sure. It is fun to hear Armin Shimmerman back playing the role, just like the Na Visitor has come back for hers. Pretty great.
Yeah. I like the idea that Quark would be running this empire of chain restaurants from the station, too. Like, he never left Deep Space Nine. He's still, like, got his hands in the business.
Ransom has such a great question here. He's like, if you can replicate anything... what does anything in a franchise have of any unique value at all?
Get a life.
Yeah, why would people come? I mean, aside from to get a selfie with Quark and pay him a strip of latinum for the privilege.
That seems like it would have the most value, but it's not true. It's the Quark 2000 replicator, and I love the number at the end of it. Like 2000 used to be a fantastical number in the 80s when we were thinking about future machines, but that this also has a 2000 is really great.
A lot of fun. And, you know, he brags on this and we cut away from Upper Decks characters to Lower Decks characters coming into the bar and fanboying and fangirling out about being in the original Quarks, even though Mariner has made fun of them for being such tourists. It's like going to the original Starbucks in Seattle.
They walk past an original Morn and say nothing.
I mean, the good thing about going to the original Quarks is the logo still has tits in it.
the best thing. You got to get that t-shirt.
That's something we should have on podshop.biz. It's Quark, but with boobs.
I love it. I love it. Flag this. We'll get it done months after we've said so on the show.
Yeah.
But it will be in podshop.biz.
Set a reminder for like 3-4 months from today as you're listening to this. Go to podshop.biz and buy the Quark with Tits Starbucks logo parody shirt.
All references to podshop.biz need to be, instead of go right now to podshop.biz, just say, hey Siri, set a reminder for 2 months from now to check podshop.biz. Your kid's going to be driving when podshop.biz finally launches.
The day I went on family leave, I told my wife, well, it was a lot, but we got it all done. I wanted to leave with all of the episodes we needed recorded for family leave, and I wanted to get podshop.biz on the launch pad so it could start in my absence. And we did it. We did all of it.
Sure did, Ben.
The eternal optimist. Also optimistic is Bold Boimler, who notices the Dabo table off in the corner.
Oh my stars, they've got Dabo.
And enthusiastically throws himself into the fray in the manner of an Adam Pranica. And I've seen you whip out your coin purse.
Oh yeah.
At a gambling establishment.
I played with some friends of DeSoto at Star Trek Las Vegas.
Yeah?
Yeah, I played craps with DeFested and Michael for a couple hours.
Wow.
And just had a great time at Star Trek Las Vegas with them.
That's good stuff.
That thing happened, though. I was Bold Adam in the last half an hour. You'll remember famously at the last Star Trek Las Vegas you and I went to, I was at a craps table as our car was arriving at the hotel to take us to the airport. And I was in the middle of a thing, and I just couldn't leave.
And I was sweating bullets.
But I cashed. I cashed big. Like, hell yeah. All I do is bets. No matter what. Won a bunch of money, got in the car, and went to the airport. This was a similar situation, except I got totally nut-kicked.
Oh.
Getting Bold Boimlered like on my last couple rolls. Oh, wow. It sucked because I was doing great. I was doing great for hours, and then I just gave it all back.
Man, I mean, what you didn't realize when you were off playing craps last time we were both in Star Trek Las Vegas was I got to meet Mesk.
Who?
Mesk, the Orion who is also in Starfleet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, a fellow Orion.
Who also comes with Adam Pally's voice. Unmistakable.
Yeah. He really leans into the shady side of the Orion mystique. He introduces himself to Tendi and is talking about what a great piratey energy Orions have. And Tendi has always been uncomfortable with this part of the rep that she gets when she walks into a room.
This is an interaction that makes it hard to be friends with Rutherford sometimes, because Rutherford does not get the verbal cues and like the physical mannerisms of a Tendi wanting to leave a situation.
Yeah, there's not a lot of room reading going on with Rutherford or Mesk, really. Like, they are both just kind of running roughshod over Tendi's half-asserted discomfort.
Rutherford has a real your wife or my wife kind of energy during a moment where their partner wants to leave a situation.
Yeah. And like later Tendi is like, I was doing the hand signal. And he's like, what? I didn't agree to that.
I picked up a new technology in the last few weeks. I want to run by you.
Okay.
Because I've been
I'm writing this down.
I've been running into a situation that has been very frustrating lately, which has been, I will say something like, do you want to leave this thing? Or do you want to fill in the blank?
Right.
And often the answer is, no, I'm fine. That is the wrong way to suggest a thing that you want to do. It is not direct enough.
Yeah.
I need to be the person big enough to be like, I would like to leave or fill in the blank or whatever. And then that makes it clear what my intentions and interests are. And that works a lot better.
Wow. I don't know why I never thought of it, but it does seem like a good idea and worth trying.
Yeah.
If I can muster the courage.
Just try it. You know what? Try it when I meet your baby tonight.
Mm.
I would like Adam to hold the baby, said Ben.
Yeah. I suggest leaving before the check hits the table.
Rutherford and Tendi get looped in for a tour with Mesk that Tendi does not want to take. And we cut over to Mariner, who has, as you say, been invited to a ladies' night by Jen.
Mm.
This is a place and a hang that she is not super comfortable with. You'd assume that, just knowing what we know about Jennifer.
Yeah.
But she's made even more uncomfortable because she shows up wearing the Uhura uniform. She's too dressed up for the occasion.
Wow, looking professionally uniform.
I didn't get the memo that this was like a sweats kind of party.
Right.
She should have come showing midriff.
It's more of a midriffy type hang.
A midriff sweat salon.
It's a candle making slash poetry slam salon. And Jennifer's friends are all like very bookish and not super fun, I would say. Like,
yeah.
They're definitely like, they all share common interests, but they're not like good time buddies the way Tendi and Rutherford and Boyms are.
I've been watching a lot of The Office on syndicated television.
Oh, yeah.
Lately.
The Ricky Gervais program.
No, the other one, The American Office.
Yeah.
And one of the things that show does really well is the combination of uncomfortable moment and like off work employee hang. And that's what this is, right? Because it's not just that it's woo-woo shit and candle making. It's that it's in the workplace and it's with work people.
Yeah. And work people that she doesn't know really.
Yeah.
So this is like her first impression of them in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, and their first impression of her outside of the reputation she's built up, which hasn't been super great.
So Mariner's going to be hitting that Saurian brandy pretty hard as a result.
I mean, she's hitting it because these girls are attracted to Boimler.
What? They're so sexy.
They're chatting her up about how fucking hot Boimler is.
It's another one of these women find Boim's irresistible bits that we've seen a couple times now. And it seems like it grosses Mariner out, but she also has not like described it to anyone or talked about it other than expressing her displeasure with it.
She's not a good friend for not disclosing this to him, right? Or, you know what? I kind of want to walk that back. Does Boimler style himself as a particularly lonely person? Like, he's desperate in a couple of episodes.
He's desperate for, like, career stuff, though. It doesn't seem like he's thirsty for a relationship.
Right. Yeah.
Like, has he ever expressed romantic interest in anyone? I can't really think of a moment.
Yeah, there was the one girlfriend he had from that other ship.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was doing all sorts of things to impress her.
Yeah.
You radiate some primal confidence. I'm sure you felt it.
No, I try not to feel anything around Brad.
But that was a specific romantic interest and not a general...
Right.
This is not a Robert De Niro, I am alone, I am not lonely situation, you know?
Yeah. He's really the De Niro of the show.
Uh-huh.
So that hang seems to be going in a very awkward direction. Also awkward is the introduction of Captain Freeman to this Karema negotiator who, you know, I mean, she breaks the ice by saying, hey, we brought a ship full of gifts for you guys, so you're probably going to enjoy talking to us. But the negosh is not the subject of this episode's focus. We cut back down to the promenade where Mesk is giving the grand tour to Rutherford and Tendi. And Mesk is very performative in talking about all his Orion-y antics that he's gotten into.
So real talk, what's the first ship you ever stole, Ma?
Actually, I don't do that stuff.
It just becomes more and more uncomfortable for Tendi. I feel like this is an episode where all of our characters are being pushed into great social discomfort, aside from Boimler, who's just raking money in.
Freeman finally calls Tendi for help, and it gives her a way out of this nightmare.
Oh, what a shame. Rutherford, let's go.
The, like, go get the gifts out of the cargo hold.
Go get the balloons out of the trunk, but open that trunk slowly.
Yeah, and if any dead clowns fall out, that's not our fault.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, oh, thank God the phone rang kind of moments, except for Mesk invites himself on this mission. He's going to be providing security for the delivery of gifts to the Karema ship.
She just can't wiggle out of this, can she?
Yeah. We need to score a lot of land fast.
Licensed businessman.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Back with Bold Boimler, he's on a huge run at the Dabo table, a run that we've maybe never seen before at Dabo. Stacks and stacks of that lat.
And the streak continues.
Yeah, it seems like uniquely Quark is not the one worried about this. There seems to be sort of a pit boss Ferengi character who has been empowered to be the one stressing about somebody winning a lot of money.
Yeah, that is strange. I mean, but it may just be that Quark has so many responsibilities and things to think about. He can't have his eye on this one table. He's got dozens of tables around the quadrant.
Yeah, well, and like the point of opening a gambling establishment is that you're making money off of the bets no matter what people are winning or losing.
Right. It's the easiest thing in the world to make money owning a casino. Like,
you'd have to be a staggeringly bad business person to go out of business with a casino.
I mean, a bad business person, but also just a fucking dummy in general. Just like a vacuous sucking hole for a brain.
Right. So at least Quark has figured that out.
Right. Back in the ladies' salon, it's story time. And the theme for story time is personal battlefields.
Oh, great, because this one is mine.
The details of the ladies' salon were really funny to me, but I'm wondering if they were too funny to me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the interpretive dance may have taken it a little bit far, but, you know, as no stranger to personal battlefields, I thought these jokes probably hit just as well for you and me as they were for the ladies.
When Mariner is not totally enthusiastic about participating in this, in like, the snap instead of applause or whatever.
Yeah.
She is called out as being what some people would refer to as a suppressive person.
Mm.
Oh, no, I don't want to disrespect anything.
Jenny was right. You do love being contrary.
What people would refer to her as that, Adam?
I don't know.
People that you like to have brunch with?
If you want to blend in, you better be doing the snaps, Mariner.
What pamphlets have you been reading since I went on family leave, Adam?
Been taking a lot of long walks in LA, Ben.
Speaking of long walks, the diplomatic group takes a long walk down the promenade, and Freeman is trying to make the argument that the Alpha Quadrant is a great opportunity for the Carema. If they could open up trade in the Alpha Quadrant, they could make a ton of money. Just look at all of the prosperous businesses here on the promenade. And he's like, this is like a shitty mall in a bad part of town. What are you talking about?
A tailor and some tchotchke kiosks? This is hardly worth my time.
Kira kind of thinks on her feet. Like, Kira has got to be so disgusted to hear the words coming out of her mouth that Quarks is an example of something good, something to aspire to.
That is seven full seasons of character development that Kira is able to stomach saying what she says. And she says, like, Quark has prospered greatly. He's got franchises all over the quadrant, and it all started here. So if you got a toehold into the A-Quad at Deep Space Nine, the quadrant is your oyster. Just talk to this dude about it. And she leads them into the bar and tries to get Quark to sort of be the, like, impromptu spokesperson for the business opportunities that DS9 represents. Quark is having none of it.
Do us a favor here, Quark. We're trying to make a good impression.
Maybe. I don't want to make a good impression.
No mention made of the unexploded torpedo experience that Quark had, which would seem to me to be the main thrust of his umbrage.
Right, right.
You know, his anti-Karemin sentiments, if you will.
Yeah. Instead, he's talking about the customers of his that died, which is a more sentimental Quark than we often get, like, this early in an episode. Like, I feel like you can beat Quark into sentimentality over the course of an hour-long DS9 episode, but it's not his starting position ever.
And when the scene rests on a single of Quark and he's like, I don't hate you, Karemin. I hate what you made me become. You gather the fullness of his feelings there.
Yeah. Elsewhere in the bar, the Ferengi pit boss seems to think that Bold Boimler has like vibrating anal beads making him good at Dabo or something.
Yeah, but that just makes him a good chess champion, right? Can you imagine getting your beads confused?
Oh, man.
Like, maybe you're someone who likes doing chess and Dabo.
And playing the rosary, and it's like, whoops!
It's probably a red and blue thing, like with thermometers, right?
Oh, yeah.
You want to have them differently colored depending on what you're playing.
Yeah, that's just smart.
Yeah. That's just smart butt play strategy, Ben.
Mm-hmm. That's why people tune into Greatest Trek, you know? They learn about flared bases. They learn about color coding your beads.
They learn about the color and consistency of baby pee.
Speaking of color and consistency, Mesk and Tendi and Rutherford are loading these gifts onto the Karema ship. And this is happening concurrently with the Karema noticing Quark's replicators down in the bar. And they take great umbrage when they see what Quark is working with. And Quark doesn't want them going anywhere near his replicator. He's complaining to the authorities. And the Karema knock over the device and a bunch of technology that I didn't like understand the significance of right off the bat falls out of it. But it seems to confirm whatever they suspect.
Right. It's easily identifiable to the Karemins. And through context, we understand why. None of them stop to wonder why it's called the Quark 2000, though.
No.
They look past that part.
The guy with the thing that looked like a bomb under his chest reaches into his cloak and throws that thing. Shax pushes Kira out of the way, saving her life. And that thing wedges itself into a panel and causes a power outage all over the station that even extends onto the Cerritos.
Like, if Deep Space Nine, the show, takes place in like the 2300s, why wouldn't it be like the Quark 4000? That sounds super futuristic.
Yeah.
Quark 5000? That sounds even more futuristic.
Even being conservative and calling it the Quark 3000 would buy you a lot of time
it
before
really would.
You had to rebrand. You know?
You wouldn't have to change it for a long time. It would remain futuristic sounding for Quark's entire life.
Yeah, but that's not what he did. He went 2000.
If they turn Quark into a golem, that's the only way that he'll ever experience what the year 3000 is.
Wow. Wow. Or, you know, put him on a Starship Discovery and send him off into the wild blue future.
That's right. Yeah. Do you think they had to renumber all of the future tech on Discovery? When it went to the future, I bet they did.
Yeah. They don't have as many bits about stolen replicator technology on Discovery, though.
No, they sure don't.
So one of the many places that loses power is the hang that Mariner is at. You know, the lady doing the interpretive dance burns herself on one of the candles they made. Tendi and Rutherford see the Karema hauling Quark aboard their own ship.
Yeah.
While they're unloading all these gifts. And they're peeking out when a door slams shut and it traps them on the Karema ship.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, these situations are very similar all over the place. Power's out, locked behind doors.
Yeah.
Unable to communicate.
I feel like that's like a DS9 story bell that we've seen rung before. But this is like with a slightly new spin.
Yeah.
Panic seems to be setting in all over the place, and Mariner and Jennifer get in an argument about how this is going, and Jennifer reveals to Mariner that she was kind of hoping that Mariner would be a little bit more herself around these girls when they came over for this hang.
Yeah.
Because the candles are consuming all the oxygen in the room that they're in really quickly, and Mariner is being super deferential, and Jennifer's like, what are you doing? Like, you're always stomping people's nuts. I was hoping you would stomp their nuts, too.
Yeah, the thing I like about you is you're nut stomping. So get to stomping them nuts. And so Mariner does with a phaser.
Turns out stunned people breathe less oxygen than conscious people.
This makes total sense to me.
Yeah, so to save their lives, she starts blasting everyone in the room.
Yeah. And this totally floods Jennifer's basement, right?
Yeah. It really works. You know, I've always enjoyed when I see my wife walk into a room of my friends and just start blasting away.
Wasn't Jennifer's basement a Megan Fox movie? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah. Yeah. Diablo Cody penned script.
Yeah. A lot of people think it holds up. I haven't seen it in a long time. I don't know.
Yeah. Didn't they do it on the Flophouse at some point?
Oh, probably. They do everything over there.
Yeah.
They work harder than we ever will.
They do. On board the Karema ship, Rutherford is like, Mesk, dude, this is perfect. You've been talking about all of your piratey hijinks this whole time, and you've got that device on your belt that's a Orion piracy tool.
Yeah.
Like, gotta break us out of this Karema ship. And
he's got the Orion Leatherman, right?
Right.
You know what? There's probably a real Orion Leatherman, too. Like, that's just a person wearing leather.
Yeah.
Probably a ton of those.
That's a whole kind of person on Orion.
This is why you call it the Orion Omni tool or whatever and not a Leatherman tool. It's just too confusing.
Orion Army knife?
Yeah, all right. Yeah, okay. Put it on the whiteboard. Put it on the board!
This is kind of calling Mesk's bluff.
Yeah.
To put it in gambling terms. He's going to have to put his piracy money where his piracy mouth is.
The breakdown that Mesk has, I think, is one of the reasons you cast Adam Pally, right? Because an Adam Pally breakdown is a really funny thing to hear. Whether you're watching the great comedy show Happy Endings or you're watching him do his tourism show, 110 Places to Party Before You Die with the great John Gabris. Like, he's a breakdown artist. He's great at this.
He rules.
I've never pirated anything in my whole stupid life.
What?
He reveals he's actually from Ohio and was adopted by humans. He is sort of to Orion culture what Worf is to Klingon culture.
Oh.
Talks a lot of shit, but
oh, man.
It's not the culture he actually grew up with.
Ooh.
And has similar misunderstandings about it, right? Like when Worf actually goes into Klingon, like, war halls, and everybody's like laughing and having a great time, and he's being all stiff and rigid. They're like, what is wrong with you, man?
Yeah. Yeah. What are they going to do with Worf in season 3 of Picard? Is he going to continue to suck?
If they don't do something with him not being able to get through a door just for us, I will be very disappointed.
You know what's funny is with the way that Worf is with his family and just completely ignoring them, he could be sitting right next to Kern and it would be like a perfectly quiet conversation. Is anyone sitting here? No. Be my guest.
This is Kern getting on the bus after... after missing it originally.
Yeah. It is very wet out there today, is it not? The bus always gets humid on the rainy days. Worf just walks into the closed bus door.
Mm. Must be sealed.
So it turns out Tendi does have some of these skills of a pirate.
And a dentist.
Yeah.
Whoa. Wait a minute. That thing has a tooth remover?
Shh, I'm pirating. Let's go.
She leaps into action. She steals a gold-pressed latinum tooth from one of the Karema, uses it to short-circuit the impulse drive on the Karema ship, and stops the ship from entering the wormhole just in the nick of time.
Yeah, it's just the tip.
Yeah.
Is what's in there. Not going all the way in. Doesn't count.
Now, come on. Who's ever caught a VD doing this?
Yeah, feels pretty good.
Yeah, you can't get pregnant from pre-ship.
Sure can't. I mean, there was that one kid that changed schools.
Right, right.
But I didn't hear it was from this.
No, I heard his mom went crazy. A lot of cutting around. Mariner and Jennifer decide that it's going to look sus if they aren't also stunned when everybody wakes up, so they take a phaser selfie.
Oh, I like that term.
Yeah. I mean, that's clearly what they're doing, right? They do the, like, hold it up at arm's length and point it back at them.
Well, shall we?
I rarely have a literature reference on the show, Ben, but I thought it was a very Romeo and Juliet moment of like, you know, you come to and you see everyone else looking dead. You decide to shoot yourself or take yourself out. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah.
Very romantic in that way. The way Romeo and Juliet is.
Yeah.
Very romantic.
This episode it's interesting. It was written by Sid Meier and directed by Baz Luhrmann.
Yeah. Yeah. No one in the cast older than 26.
So, in the detention area on Deep Space Nine, all of the Karema have been gathered up and put behind a force field. And they explain that they were not kidnapping Quark. They were arresting Quark because the Quark 2000 contains stolen Karema technology.
I may have borrowed a Karema replicator some years ago, but it was my codes that made it so popular.
Oh, that's beside the point.
Justifiable.
Yeah.
Is what the Karemans believe this is.
But Captain Freeman is in a diplomatic mood, not a punitive mood. And so she proposes something that will make everybody happy. And we cut to Quark's bar where their Karema are hanging out and do seem indeed to be very happy. But Quark, not so much. It turns out the deal is that he's giving a huge percentage of the profits from his empire to the Karema, you know, as like a licensing fee, basically, for the technology that is used in the Quark 2000.
Before this deal was arranged, I had it in mind that they were just going to give the Karemans all of the Mylar balloons and the bottles of booze or whatever, like the gifts. Use the gifts to arrange for this, and then we'll call it even after that. But the percentage.
Savage.
That Quark has to give up 76% of his profits? I was blown away by this.
Yeah. It's a lot of percentage points.
It's most of the percent.
Yeah. I mean, nobody would be in business if they gave up this much of a percent.
But I bet this is one of those, like, this is only the percentage that they know about. Very different percentage in actuality, right?
Right.
So, like, the real figure must be very different.
Who knows, man?
This is that squirrely Ferengi accounting.
Yeah.
That they're famous for.
The button on the episode, speaking of squirrely accounting, is Mariner offering to not use a hologram that she has of Quark's head on Kira's body instead of paying for her huge bar tab that apparently she still has from when she was stationed on DS9.
Yeah. What Lower Decks promised seasons ago was that Mariner's return to Deep Space Nine would be fraught with a lot of drama, but this is the only dramatic moment we get of a Mariner back aboard Deep Space Nine.
Well, she's only just been aboard, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, she was on the Cerritos for most of it.
She was stuck in a pajama party.
Right. So maybe, I don't know, I haven't watched ahead, but maybe next episode they're still here? I don't know. Wow, you just violated our embargo. We're going to stop getting screeners.
Cut that out. Cut it out.
Just beep it out.
The episode ends in a weird half-hour sitcom flourish.
Yeah.
Because Tendi and Rutherford are making peace with Tendi's pirate past, and then Tendi is like, you know what? I think I'm ready to embrace the cultural history of my people. And then she whips out this tooth, the Karemin tooth, that she's kept for some reason.
Yeah.
And Quark is there, and he takes it from her. But I don't know why he does it. What makes him think he can't?
Yeah. Shouldn't... I mean, like, the move at that point would have just been to drop in, like, an Odo going, Quark!
Yeah, it's a Dukes of Hazzard ending tacked onto this episode.
But I wonder if that's too sad. Because of the passing of Rene Aubergenois.
Do you think that the ending that we get this episode is a different version than maybe the one that was intended?
No. Maybe it like didn't test well or something, but...
You think they're testing this show, Ben? I don't think so. No one's testing this show.
I think they're blind firing this bad boy.
I think it's fucking working. But how well did it work, Ben? Did you like this episode?
Oh, I like this episode a lot. I think that this is an episode that really starts to deliver on the promise of the premise of Lower Decks of we get to go to all of these places in Star Trek that are familiar, fun places to go and see them through different characters' eyes and tell different types of stories in those places. And if Star Trek is a place, then like the setting of Deep Space Nine shouldn't be confined to just that one show. It should be somewhere we get to go all the time. And
right.
I like the idea that we can stop there from time to time.
Yeah. In less capable hands, this is just a nostalgia play.
Yeah.
But in the way that you're describing, this is a place where a different story occurs. And we get the nostalgic great feelings for an Anah Visitor or an Armin Shimmerman. Like, we get characters we love voiced by people we like. And we're in a place that that we care a lot about, but it's not the point of the story. And I think that's really important that it isn't.
Yeah. And instead, it is a story that is both about personal relationships between our characters and them understanding each other better, and also advancing storyline within universe. Like, the Karema are an interesting species that I'd like to know more about. And I feel like this episode gives us a little bit of that, too.
I'll take the other side of that argument any day. I don't find the Karemans very interesting at all. I think they're an interesting choice for a foil in this episode, but I'm fine with not hanging out with them ever again.
I just think it's like, it's interesting to think that there are analogs to all of our types of species on the other side of the wormhole. And that Deep Space Nine is over as a series doesn't mean that there's like a loss of continuity there.
Fair. One last thing I wanted to say in this part of the show was that I'm starting to gather that, you know, in addition to like the difficulty in making a story fully told in 26 minutes with like layers and B and C stories, it is really hard to wrap up all of those stories in an episode this long. And I think with an ending like this, I'm starting to detect how difficult that is in this format.
Yeah.
There's a format to the ending of Lower Decks now that involves a little slapstick, maybe Boimler complaining about his circumstance and the music swelling into credits in a way that feels a little self-parodic almost.
Right.
It's creating its own genre. And in that way, like, I can't say that it's bad or it's wrong, because it's neither. But it's just like a quality that they're creating and making it the official way to end a Lower Decks episode in a way that, like, isn't completely satisfying. But I think the show is making the case for this is the way we end our episodes. And that's just the way it is.
Everybody gets together in the bar at the end.
Right. Yeah, that feeling.
We're in a different bar than normal, but it feels very similar to a lot of others.
Yeah, and I think when we watch episodes from here, that's something I want to be on the lookout for, is like, is this a Lower Decks ending or not?
Yeah.
Because I think there is a quality to them now.
Well, I want to be on the lookout for Priority One messages. Do you want to head over to the inbox with me, Adam?
Just the tip.
Okay.
If my mouse is in there.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Adam, our first Priority One message is from Jean Marie, and it is to Phil, and it goes like this. Happy birthday, Phil. I think I'm supposed to ask for a Chris Brenner drop.
I'm Chris Brenner. Brenner Information Systems. You know, interface, operations, net access, channel 90.
That Chris Brenner.
Thanks for making me watch episodes of Deepfake 9 and Emus Are Evil and other shows so you can keep up with these podcasts. Insert Larry David joke here. I love you, and I'm sorry you'll never understand why Q episodes are my favorite.
Do we have a Larry David joke here?
Sure, we get something.
I don't know. In the absence of that, I will say you and I have been communicating in almost entirely curb gifts. over the last few weeks, and
yeah,
and in such a way we know exactly what the other person is trying to say.
Yeah, truly.
Ben, our second Priority One message is from the STA USS Dauntless crew. Captain Killian, in parentheses Jeff, and then Zala, in parentheses Ruth Anastasia. We got Tamu, parentheses Joe, and Dr. Latha, parentheses Ramon LP4.
Hey!
It is to Code 47 from Captain Kalian to Benjamin Harrison and SWIHW. This is Captain Kalian of the USS Dauntless. We extend congratulations on your new baby.
Wow!
Lieutenant Timu sensors report excess adorable Tron particles. A Q told Latha the baby is of great interest to the Continuum. Lieutenant Commander Zala senses the baby expressing feelings of happiness and love. Lieutenant Tior shows course projections to be bright and promising.
Ah, thank you, Captain Kellyan and the USS Dauntless crew. That's really nice of you.
This is a Star Trek Adventures crew.
That's great.
Made up of many familiar friends of DeSoto.
Yeah, I recognize those names anywhere.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm tickled pink, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you should definitely share this message with your wife.
Yeah, I'm just going to read it verbatim to her and see what looks wash over her face.
Uh-huh.
Mostly dismay, I'm predicting.
Yeah, just an unfathomable sadness.
Yeah, much like earlier today when I was watching Star Trek Voyager on the couch with the baby on my belly, and I said, "You're at work with Daddy." And I looked over at my wife and, you know, just watched her hopes and dreams crumble before her.
She just walks out into the street.
Well, if you'd like to get a Priority One message, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and set one up today.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin! Ooh. I'm going to give it to Quark. I think Quark gets it because Quark kind of delivers on the premise of Quark in the funniest way in this episode. Like, I was just thinking, like, so much at the beginning of this episode about, like, yeah, like, we have seen Quark's bar in other places in Star Trek now, implying that Quark has achieved some kind of success. Like, he's he somehow like beat the odds and figured out a way to not be sort of a laughingstock, mm-hmm. which was always the joke about Quark, is that nobody wants it more than him, and it's always eluded him. And, you know, like it, when you just see a establishing shot of some spaceport and there's a Quark's bar in an episode of some show, you're like, man, so Quark is really doing it. And I love that this episode makes sure that in the continuity, Quark is not doing it. I think that's so funny.
God, the way you put that was so convincing. I was going to say it was Mask, but now I'm with you. Let's make it Quark.
Wow. Well, a really fun episode. But before we go here on Greatest Trek, we like to shout out somebody that mentioned our show on social media. Isn't that right, Adam?
You're right about that, Ben. At FairEnough34 shows some pretty big love for our episode that was an interview with Mike McMahon.
Yeah.
Message goes like this. I'm pretty hype right now. The Mike McMahon interview on Greatest Trek is a must listen for Trek fans. Hilarious and wonderful deep dive into Lower Decks and why we love these franchises so much. Can't wait to watch new Lower Decks.
Awesome. I hope at FairEnough34 is watching along with us. And if you'd like to get a message read on the end of the show, make sure to post about us on Instagram or Twitter and why you like the show. It helps get the word out about what we're doing over here, and we really appreciate it. And you might get a shout out right here on the end of the episode.
Yeah.
All right, Adam. I can't wait till next week. But in the meantime, I think we got to throw the keys to our producer, Wendy Pretty, and she'll tell us a little bit about next week's episode in the outro.
All right, Wendy, catch.
You threw those really hard. Kind of mean.
She got out of the way.
Yeah. But then she had to like go pick them up off the ground. Like, that sucks, dude.
Is that what she did? I thought they like flew and then skidded across the ground and then like down into a drain.
Yeah, so now because I have the longest arms, I have to reach down into this creepy drain pipe to get the keys. How else are we gonna get the pod car home?
Probably nothing down there. Besides keys.
No killer clowns or anything.
You've had worse cover your body over the last few weeks. Like a sewer would probably be a dream to you at this point.
Yeah. That does sound pretty nice.
Greatest Trek is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica, and it's produced and edited by Wendy Pretty. Coming up on Lower Decks Season 3, it's Episode 7, A Mathematically Perfect Redemption. A wayward Starfleet ensign struggles to find a path to redemption. We want to thank Adam Ragusea for the incredible music he made for this show. He's also got a podcast and a YouTube cooking channel, and you can find those by searching for Adam Ragusea. Nick Ditmore made the show art, and Bill Tilley is running the social media pages for Uxbridge Shimoda. Make sure you're following at Greatest Trek on Instagram and Twitter, and use the hashtag Greatest Trek when you talk about the show online. If you're enjoying Ben and Adam's recaps, one of the best things you can do to help spread the word is recommending Greatest Trek to someone you know. And if you want to help support the podcast directly, it's really easy to set up a membership at MaximumFun.org/join, and we really appreciate that. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Greatest Trek.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Audience supported.